talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are, Tony Mack and the Triplett.
Welcome in, everybody, to a New Year, New Me edition of the Tony Mack and the Triplett. New Year, same me, because I'm incredible. So I don't need any of that being different just because it's a new year. But we will have a great show leading you into the new year. This is the last live local show you will hear on these airwaves before the new year, so we'll make sure and make it a good and memorable one. I say we, but obviously Tony Mack here, and we're down a starter. All right, we got a starter out, so we didn't even get to go to the bench. We had to go to the G League for this one. Call a guy up, but we shouldn't skip a beat here. He's a really good friend of mine. I talked to him just like I talked to anybody else about sports. Best man in my wedding, great personality. This should be really fun to see how this translates to the radio. But Tanner Long, whatever name you want to use today, Gabriel, Michael, he's got four of them, so it doesn't matter. But Tanner, how are you? Welcome in.
Oh, man, I'm good. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be part of the show today.
So are we calling you Tanner, Gabriel, or Michael, or whichever?
I say we just switch it throughout the show, you know, keep it, you know.
That's a good idea. It'll sound like three people or three different people are here.
I'm trying to change my voice, you know, make it.
I'll ask you a question, and then when you're done answering, I'll ask Michael.
Right,
you have to come up with three different answers for everything, by the way.
I'll try. I'm not too smart, so you know.
Which is weird. I ask yes or no questions, so having a third answer is going to be really weird.
Maybe.
So you absolutely disgust me, so this is going to be fantastic. There's going to be a lot to talk about. You're going to enjoy the 10 o'clock hour. We will talk a lot of bowl games first and get reactions to yesterday. But in the 10 o'clock hour, we'll have Bo Morgan. He's the program director for Atlanta Falcons Radio Network, so that'll be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about the Falcons trying to be the third NFC South team out of four to squeeze into the playoffs. All they have to do is beat the Panthers. The Panthers and Saints have already clinched, so we'll have him on. He right there in the heart of Atlanta, so we'll talk to him a little bit about the stadium preparations and what Atlanta's going to be like these next couple of weeks, because we've got, oh my goodness, you got the Peach Bowl on Monday. That's one of the early games, so you'll have Auburn and UCF, and I'm sure everybody's going to travel well for Auburn, so you'll have Atlanta slam-packed for that one. And then you've got the national championship game on Monday, so we'll talk to him about the preparation and what necessarily he and everybody else around in the media, what their preparation is like before something like this. Because I'm sure your regular routine, and I know a lot of people like me, and sports radio are the same way. They are creatures of habit. They love it when everything is the same. When their show is the same setup, the entire week, everything is the same. And then obviously preparations have to be a little different in the next couple of weeks. So I'm really curious to see what that's going to be about. So we'll have him on. I know you'll have some interesting
good
questions.
Times. Yeah.
Big Falcons fan.
Big Falcons fan.
By the way, we have to, it's kind of a tradition in sports everything. When someone else comes on, you have to tell them who you squeeze for. So this is going to be a lot of fun because you're all over the place like I am.
All over.
So you're a Falcons fan. College football. Who's your squeeze?
LSU.
See, that's,
go Tigers.
That's the easy one. He's an LSU fan, so that's the easy part. Now, college basketball.
Duke. Funny story. Duke. My other best friend.
Wow.
My other best friend. The one I've known a little longer.
We have other best friends now?
Yeah that's what we
wow.
do. That's
okay.
what we do.
Continue
He's a North
story.
Carolina fan. We've always went back and forth in every sport. Before I started watching college basketball, he was like, you should go for North Carolina. I was like, no, I'm going for the rival. Became a Duke fan. This was like sixth grade. And we just went from there.
And the interesting thing is that's a good story. I do enjoy that story. But back to the whole you being an LSU fan, this is the interesting part because you were from Atlanta.
Right. So I'm from Atlanta. I moved to Alabama in like second grade, middle of second grade. Sitting in PE class, Iron Bowl comes around. Everyone's yelling War Eagle, Roll Tide in gym class. I'm like, what is going on? Because we weren't big like that in college football. They're like, well, you have to pick one. And I was like, no. Name another team. I'm a huge Lakers fan, and they were like, LSU, they're purple and gold. I was like, well, That's the choice.
Went for the colors there. That was always interesting to me. You know, I've known you for like 8 years now. It's been a long time. We've been friends for a long time. It's so weird that you're from Atlanta and you're not a Georgia fan. So that's, I mean, do you like Georgia at all?
I don't mind them. Like, they're...
That's good. As long as you don't pull for them on Monday, I don't care.
Right. Oh, yeah. No. You already know.
Yeah, well, you'll be at my house. So, and I promise you, if you're going for Georgia, you won't be the loudest one there. Me and my wife will be plenty loud.
Oh, definitely. You know I'm on your side.
Well, we have a new name. Well, you have other best friends now, so your fourth name. You're going to have to come up with four answers because your other name is Benedict for today. So, you know,
fair. I got you.
Now, I'm going to answer a lot of questions before we dive into everything else here. And I know everybody – I was at the Music City Bowl yesterday, so I know a lot of you guys. You guys knew that. Tom, I'm sure – he tweeted it out yesterday, but I'm sure he let everybody know on the air. He did his show from Baumhauer's in Birmingham. He called a Birmingham Bulls game yesterday. Arky Shea was behind the controls running things. So I know you guys know I wasn't here, and I'm sure they told you why I was at the Music City Bowl. So obviously, with the way that game finished, I know you guys have a lot of questions. Like, so let me answer the most important one first. Unfortunately, no, I did not catch up with Kenny Trill. We did not get to go have a beer. My phone died in the second quarter, right around the time. Apparently, my phone's a big Benny Snell Jr. fan because it died right as he got ejected. Like 13 minutes to go in the second quarter. Gone. Phone was done. Didn't have any juice left. I pulled up in Nashville at 10:30 yesterday morning. 10:30 in the morning, and my phone was at 73%, and I'm not even on Second Avenue yet. Dropped to 27%. I don't know if it was catching up with the weather or what was going on, but it was ridiculous. I had my phone charger in the car, but I was not about to walk back to the stadium to pick it up.
The real question is, why weren't you charging it the whole way to Nashville? You should have been at 100.
Well, yeah. That's a good point. It's a really good point. I didn't think about that until I got to Nashville and it dropped. I was like 73%. I won't be on it much until the game starts, so I'll be okay. And then it hit 27 real quick. So that's when I was like, man, I should have charged it the whole way there.
You messed up.
I did. I did mess up. And then Kenny, I got home and I finally got to charge my phone, and Kenny had hit me up probably around halftime and gave me his number and said, hey, you know, let me know where you're at. I was like, man, I'm sorry. My phone died in the second quarter. So it was unfortunate we didn't get to catch up.
So disappointing.
But I did get to sit next to another faithful listener. Ross from Decatur was there, and it was a good time. I'm gonna be honest with you guys. Didn't get to watch as much as the game as I thought I was going to. I watched, but not as intently as I planned, because we had a great conversation that lasted the entire football game. Me, Ross, a friend of his. I had to keep tabs on my dad. No joke. I turned around, and you know my dad.
Oh, yeah.
Good old David. So I turned around at one point, and my dad wasn't there. Like, Kentucky just scored to make it, right after the half, to make it 17-14. They were down 3 at this point. And I'm looking at Ross, and I'm celebrating, and I turned around. My dad was there for the touchdown. And I turned around, and he was gone. I literally looked at him. I was like, where's my dad?
He's probably on the field.
No, he was buying another drink.
Oh, well, yeah, not surprising.
Look, my dad, how do the kids put it? My dad knows how to turn up.
Turn up.
All right.
I think they say lit now.
Now, the best part about this game yesterday wasn't anything to do with the football field. It had nothing to do with the Music City Bowl. The best part was walking around and seeing all these Kentucky fans and how everybody settled down around 11:30 and any place that has a TV to watch the Kentucky-Louisville basketball game. The fact that that game was on the same day as the Music City Bowl and I was around all these Kentucky fans was incredible, because the atmosphere anywhere you went was phenomenal. And obviously, Kentucky, that was the better part of the day. My dad was a little bummed that Kentucky lost the Music City Bowl, but I was like, hey, you guys blew out Louisville.
Right.
They beat Louisville by 29 points. First time they've beaten their rival by 20 plus since 2001. So, but it was insane. I didn't know Kentucky basketball. I figured they did. Like, fan bases, all the big fan bases, mainly in football, but all the big fan bases have certain chants that they do. I didn't know that basketball fans carried them away from the stadium, but they do that because we're sitting. It's halftime. And the bar just settled down. We're at a nice little bar on 2nd Avenue. The bar just settled down because Kentucky finished off like a 15-8 run or 25-8 run to end the half. And everybody settled down. I'm like, okay, cool. So I pull out my phone to see what percent it's at. It was at 7, by the way. I pull it out to see what percentage it was at, and next thing I know, the place just erupted. I thought it was a spelling bee at first, but it turns out it was a Kentucky chant. It was everybody. Some lady walked to the middle of the bar and was like, C-A-T-S, and then the whole place went, cats, 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 cats. It was terrifying. But once the dust settled and I figured out what was going on and I wasn't a part of some weird cult, I was like, that was pretty cool. And they only did it once, but it was pretty cool.
Right. Well, you know, that college basketball, it's in their blood up there. I was up in Louisville 3 weeks ago, I think it was. And being a Duke fan in Louisville is not a good situation.
Horrible idea.
Like, I was up there and Duke was playing one night. And I went to the bar. I was like, hey, man, Duke's playing. It's a big game. Can you turn it on for me? He was like, you know, we don't like your kind up here. What? I was like, man, I just want to watch a basketball game.
Yeah, in some ways, basketball fans, like the diehard ones for the big schools like Louisville and Kentucky and guys like that, they're almost even more harsh than college football fans.
I'm telling you, like, that they'll hate you for being on the other team at least at the wrong time.
Right. It's weird because when you're in the college football realm, you understand that people mainly just hate you if you're an Alabama fan.
Fair.
But in college basketball, you kind of get caught off guard because you live in the South, so you know you can say you're a fan of anybody in the South and be safe as long as it's not Alabama and you're not talking to an Alabama fan. And then you turn around and you're like, yeah, I'm a Duke fan, and in basketball, and all of a sudden you're catching all this fire. It's different.
It is. And I was shocked. I was like, man, I understand, but, you know, Louisville sucks. So can I please just watch number one Duke play?
I don't think anybody's going to argue with you there. They just got beat by 29 points yesterday. But let's transition back into football for just a second. Tanner and I are big basketball fans, and he's one of the guys I talk to when it comes to the NBA action. I could sit here and talk NBA all day, but apparently a lot of these guys around here, not a huge NBA market.
Yeah.
But there are some that like to hear it, but we did a segment on Wednesdays. Wednesdays we have an NBA segment, pretty much a basketball hour on Tom Abraham Show. We have we usually have Bo Estes of NBATV.com, and then we have Greg Peterson for college basketball, so we usually get all that in. But there might be some time. With some crazy finishes last night, there could be some time for some NBA. But let's get into some of the stuff that happened yesterday on the football field. I mean, what a day for bowl games yesterday. Were you entertained?
There were good games yesterday, but, you know, it's college football. They're always going to be good games.
You hope so. I mean, this bowl season for me has been really anticlimactic, but, I mean, we're finally getting into the bulk of the SEC games, some ACC games, and we had some wild finishes yesterday. The Texas A&M Wake Forest game was the first one. I benefited from this one because I picked Wake. Apparently, I didn't know I picked Wake, but apparently I picked Wake. I hedged my bet a little bit on accident. I picked against the spread in a group, and then I picked straight up in the Doghouse Bowl pick 'em, and I made the mistake of not going back and looking at my against the spread picks before I made my straight up picks, and so far they had correlated the same because there haven't been any really big spreads, so I haven't picked a team to cover and then picked another team to win because the spreads have all been like 3.5. But I think the biggest spread besides like Akron, FAU, and Florida State, SMU, the spreads of all, I think the highest spread I saw was like 5.5 points. So anything below that, I'd pretty much just picked as a pick 'em. So, you know, I was pretty much picking straight up. And then it got into yesterday where Wake Forest was like a 3.5 point favorite or a 2.5 point favorite. Apparently, I picked Wake to cover, but then in the bowl pick 'em, I picked Texas A&M to win the game. It was really weird, but I won one of them. So Wake Forest ended up winning the game by a field goal, so they covered the hook for me there, which was fantastic because I got bit by the hook in the TCU game. TCU was favored by 2.5 and won by 2, so I got killed there a little bit. But more interesting than picking against the spread in that game, what a finish that one was. It was 38-28 at halftime. Wake Forest was up 10 at halftime, and then after being down 14-0, A&M jumped on them 14-0 with a couple block punts, and then Wake Forest scored 31 unanswered points and then took a 38-28 lead into the half. And then A&M came back. I think Wake Forest the whole third quarter had a field goal. I watched a little bit of this right before the Kentucky game. This one finished up while I was actually at the Music City Bowl, so I had to come home and watch the end of this recorded. But A&M comes back, takes a 45-41 lead, I believe, into the fourth quarter. And then Wake Forest goes down with a couple minutes left. scores their touchdown. They go up 55-52. And then the controversial finish was A&M goes deep on a pass. Guy was open. It overthrew him by like 3 yards. Wake Forest, easily a pass interference, missed pass interference call. I believe they wanted to say it was uncatchable. But it landed 2 or 3 yards in front of him. If the Wake Forest guy doesn't armbar him and grab him and wrap him up, that's a completed pass. They don't call it. A&M then has to go for it on fourth down, doesn't get it. So I understand in SEC fans that wanted to see the SEC win a game, haven't done that yet. They're 0-3 right now. They wanted to see the SEC win a game. It didn't happen. There was controversy about it. But that's not the story about this game for me. This game, more than any other bowl game so far, embodied what I want to see in college football bowl games. This is what you want to see. All season long, when there's a shootout like this, like in the Oklahoma-Oklahoma State game, and even last year in Oklahoma and Texas Tech, in the regular season, nobody wants to see scores like that with big-name teams and Power 5 teams because in the regular season, when you win a game like that, when someone scores 50 points but you still win, they want to say, you're in the college football playoff discussion, but you just gave up 50 points. You don't have defense. That doesn't need to be in the college football playoff, whatever, whatever. But when you get into bowl season, this is the last game. It doesn't matter. This is the end of the road. This is the dead end to the season. So after this bowl game, there's nothing. And this does not mean anything going forward into next season. So if you're going to end the season like this with this game, meaning it doesn't lead to any other bowl game, it doesn't lead to the playoff, You want to see offense. You want to see an explosion.
Right. Let's just play the second string defense every game in the
Well, I think they did
bowl games.
I think they did.
I had to.
If they didn't, I'm really curious as to what the second string, how bad the second string defense is, because Wake Forest put up 646 total yards and A&M put up 614.
Yeah, like that. That's a crazy amount. Like, that should never happen in a game, but we see it all too often, actually.
Right. Like,
there's no defense played.
And you don't want to see it in the regular season, but I want to see that in bowl. That's what I want in my bowl games. I want these high-scoring.
I just want to be entertained.
Exactly.
Like, that's all it is.
It would have made the Music City Bowl a lot better yesterday.
Oh, definitely.
Because let me tell you,
falling asleep.
You know who won that one?
The refs.
No, the weather. It was so cold.
No.
It beat everybody. The cold beat everybody. It was terribly cold out there. But it was a lot of fun late in that game. All the good parts, rest assured, all the good parts of that game, I missed them, so that was good. Late in this game, Kentucky, me and my dad are miserable, we're cold. We walked to start the fourth quarter, we walked to the other side of the stadium because that's where Kentucky was going to end going. They were headed towards that end zone, so we walked over there, and that end zone was fairly empty, so we walked over there to watch the rest of the fourth quarter from that end zone, the north end zone, so we could see Kentucky, if they were going to win, finish in that end zone. And it almost worked out that way, but we didn't think it was going to. It was still a 3-point game. It was still 17-14. Kentucky gets the ball back, throws a pick six right in front of us. So my dad said, okay, well, that was fun, and he started walking to the exit. So I followed him, and we're walking around, and I get back to my car. While we're walking around the stadium, because we had to walk to where I parked, we're walking around the stadium. I noticed Kentucky kicked a field goal with like 4 minutes left. And I'm like, okay, it's a 7-point game, whatever. I get out to my car, and I flip it on, and Kentucky had scored a touchdown. Kentucky scored a touchdown to be back within 1 point. And then I still don't know why. I got to get a hold of Mark Stoops, or any Stoops for that matter, and just find out why the hell he went for two to win this game. Didn't get it. Lost 24-23. Gave the SEC their third loss in as many tries in the bowl season. And a lot of people wanted to say, well, maybe they went for it because they couldn't do anything all game. And I definitely understand the argument. I get it. But look at it both ways. You start overtime. If you go to overtime, you start overtime in field goal range. You start in field goal range. Now, Northwestern had dominated this game on the ground. They ran for over 300 yards. But it's not like they were putting up a whole lot of points. They put up 17 points. Offensively, they scored a defensive touchdown. I mean, who's to say that they would have gotten anything more than a field goal in overtime? So I think it evened the playing field a little bit there had they done it. But it's bowl season. You know, why not? I like that aspect. That's the argument I like a little better. Instead of, oh, well, they weren't really doing much offensively and Northwestern was controlling the game. Sure, I understand that. But if you wanted to say, ah, it's bowl season, go, you know, balls out. I like that. I'm all for that. Unfortunately, it just didn't work out for Kentucky. But now they are 0-3. And we had a couple one-score games yesterday, and one of them being Utah State and New Mexico State. That one went to overtime. Utah State missed four field goals in that game, including one in overtime, and that cost them that football game. But after the Music City Bowl, the Belk Bowl, which was the Texas A&M Wake Forest game, and the New Mexico State game, it was trying to find a better way to put this. The bowl season had sucked this far. I mean, it really did. You would hope for more competitive games, but we got a couple yesterday. So you're thinking, all right, the momentum's going in our favor. Now the New Year's Six bowl games are about to start. Now you got USC and Ohio State about to kick off. The SEC's 0-3. You don't know what you're going to get in these bowl games. Finally, give us a good game. Make us feel the entertainment. Are you entertained after last night's game? Did it bring you the entertainment? We'll find out after the break. We got to get a quick break. 866-485-9867. 866-485-WUMP is how you get in to react to what you saw yesterday, what you saw this weekend. I mean, there were more bowl games on Thursday. As we'll get in, talk to me at TonyMacUMP is how you can hit me up on Twitter. Let me know where you guys are at. Trill, are you alive? I want to know how your night ended. I'm sure if you're anywhere near a radio or your phone, you probably are listening because you're really loyal and faithful. So hit me up. Call me. You call every week. I want to know if you're alive because the one thing that I know is Trill knows how to party. So we'll be right back. We'll try to find out where Trill is, and we'll answer the question of the New Year's Six bowl game. Did it entertain you? Right here on Tony Mac and the Triplets, 730, 103.9 The Ump.
Sports Radio 730 and 103.9, The Ump.
Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplet here on a beautiful Saturday morning. Not as cold as it was yesterday. Kind of disappointed. If it's gonna be this cold as it was yesterday, just continue on from there. Make that the norm, and then just continue. If it wants to drop lower than that, that's fine. But don't do this whole 34 degrees, go back up to 40 or 50, and then back down. You know why? Because that makes my life at home miserable. Because my wife gets sick if you look at her, all right? So now when the weather changes, she's sick again. And I don't mean miserable as in she makes my life miserable while she's sick. I hate seeing my wife sick. It's awful to see the person you care about sick. So please, weather, make up your mind. And stay cold, please, because if you stay cold, that means she's going to make chili this weekend, and my wife makes the best chili I've ever had. So I'm pretty excited.
I think the chili's guaranteed at this point, because she told me about it, so it kind of has to happen.
Yeah, see, she asked me again this morning to make sure I wanted it, but her base reason for making chili is because it's supposed to be really cold on Monday.
No, we just want chili.
Well, see, I'm with you, but she feels as if, you know, chili is cold weather food. And I'm all about that. That's fine. We've made chili when it's warm outside, but
right. The
cold weather is what has reminded her that, hey, we should probably make chili. And she makes a fantastic chili.
So, fair.
So I'm pretty excited about all that. And we're going to have – I think she's going to gear it up for Monday, though, because we're going to have a few more people over, and she's going to make a big crock pot full of chili then. So
I'm down.
And it's supposed to be really cold on Monday. Really cold on Monday.
We're not going outside, so that's good.
I'm not moving.
Like you're in the house.
You're in town. You're going to be in town. You're coming out there with me. So we're probably not going to go to bed until really late anyway. So which means I'm going to wake up. I'll probably miss. I've been saying for a while that the South Carolina Michigan game is so it's like the sore thumb of the New Year's Day games because it's so out of place with all the other good games that are on that morning. It starts at 11. Auburn UCF starts at 11:30. So I keep saying that I'm after 30 minutes I'm flipping and I'm never going back to that game. I might not even watch the first 30 minutes of that game. I might not even be up. So once I wake up Monday morning, I'm not moving from my house. We shouldn't have mail anyway. It's a holiday. Not moving. Not going anywhere. What's that? I mean, you just watched it again, that Wolf of Wall Street movie. I can't quote it exactly because of the language, but I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving. I'm not going anywhere.
Greatest movie ever, by the way.
It is. It's a great movie. You should take your kids and you guys should watch it.
No, please, no kids.
Don't let your kids watch that movie. Don't listen to me. Well, actually, I need you to listen to me so I can continue to have my show, but don't take my advice. All right, back to last night. We had the first New Year's Six bowl game of the season. It was the Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic. USC, Ohio State, highly anticipated. A good friend of mine, guest on the show last week, Matt Selesky, said even more than the playoff games, he was looking forward to this football game. And I told him that I really wasn't. This game didn't have as much luster for me because Ohio State and USC just, they aren't where they were a year ago with all that momentum. They hadn't been playing their best football coming into this game, especially USC. USC, I get it. Their last game, they won the Pac-12. Championship. That's all good and fine. But last year they were riding like a 9 game winning streak coming in to the Rose Bowl against Penn State. They just weren't as hot as I would have liked them to be. As much as I would have liked the number 5 and 8 teams about to face off, they weren't as hot as I would have wanted. But hopefully that was going to translate to a good game on the field. It absolutely did not, and that begs the question. And how bad was this game for the bowl games? I mean, for bowl season, because last year I did some stats the other day, and you work during the day on Huntsville, so I know you don't get to listen. But when I covered Tom's show on Wednesday, up to that point, there had been five or six out of like 21 games so far this bowl season that were decided by one possession. Last year we had 21 bowl games decided by one possession. 7 of them happened before Christmas, so we're way behind schedule right now with the bowl games decided by one possession. So before the New Year's Six bowl games, judging by what we've seen so far this season, you're thinking, okay, I don't know what I'm going to get with this game, but it's going to hold me over until I get to the big, highly anticipated matchups. You jump into the first big matchup of the bowl season, and it was a huge bust.
I don't know if we should blame USC or blame Ohio State or just blame that we kind of hyped this game up more than it should have been.
You got to blame USC for not being as ready as Ohio State was. Now everybody who wanted to, number one, everybody who wanted to nitpick at me for saying Ohio State has a top 10, top 5 defense in the country, and they wanted to say, "Oh, well, you know, Iowa put up 50-plus points on them. They're not that good. You're just reading stats." No, they're really that good. I mean, they had a bad week against Iowa. It's unfortunate, but look what they just did to one of the more potent teams in the country.
Yeah, the thing is, like, I didn't catch but the second half of this game. I went to the Alabama.com Classic yesterday to watch, you know, Sparkman losing the championship. Sparkman alum here. But only caught the second half of this game. But USC was really only 2 or 3 plays from making this a one-possession game. Like, they could have easily been in the game. Bad mistakes, terrible front-line coverage.
Yeah,
like, it was terrible.
It also came, your front-line coverage is right. Ohio State dominated the line of scrimmage on both sides of this game. They sacked Sam Darnold 8 times in this football game. He threw a pick 6 in the first half. He fumbled it twice. One of them, like you were talking about, USC was on their way down to score. And Sam Darnold fumbled the football because a defensive lineman got back there and got a hand on the ball before he could throw it. So there were some mistakes, but Ohio State forced them. So that was more so where I lean. I understand what you're saying. I wanted to see the one-possession game. I wanted to see USC score and get back in this thing. And you see the mistakes, and you're like, "Darnold, what are you thinking? What are you doing?" But from my perspective, it looked like Ohio State forced them, and that just goes to again, to the point, Ohio State just dominated this game. They came out way more ready than USC. USC did. Sam Darnold was 26 of. He threw 45 times. And that tells me right there that I don't even have to look at the sacks. That tells me Ohio State dominated the line of scrimmage right there. He threw it 46 times because USC has a great running back. Ronald Jones is a fantastic running back. And he only had 64 yards. USC total only had 57 net rushing yards. Ohio State ran for 163. JT Barrett, 11 of 17, didn't throw all that much, 114 yards, ran for a couple touchdowns. Sam Darnold.
He broke another record last night, didn't he?
JT Barrett broke a huge record last night. He broke Drew Brees' record. Both quarterbacks broke a record, but JT Barrett's was a little bigger. He broke Drew Brees' record for most career yards in Big Ten history, which is like, I think it was like 12,600, something like that. Huge record. Especially for a guy who I felt like was a little overrated.
Right.
But obviously he's done enough right to do that. And Sam Darnold broke a record. He became the first USC quarterback ever with 4,000 passing yards. So that's pretty cool, too. Last year, he probably would have broke that last year had he started the whole season, but he wasn't their starting quarterback for the first few games of that one. Now, Sam, after this game, said that he's going to mull over his NFL future. He hasn't decided if he's going pro yet or not. after watching this game, you know what that tells me? That doesn't tell me that, like, yeah, I've really been thinking about it hard. I need to think about it a little more. That tells me after I sucked it up last night, I need to see if they're still ranking me as a top five pick.
But did he suck, though? That's the thing. Like, he had, what, 356 yards, averaged 7 yards a throw, threw over 50%. Like, did he really suck?
His quarterback rating was a 35.
He got sacked 8 times. Like, there's only so much you can do when the man's hitting you in 1 second.
Well, when you're looking at it from an NFL perspective, you got to go back, and they're going to look at the film. They're not just going to look at the numbers that he was sacked 8 times. They're going to look at the sacks. What could he have done to maybe avoid getting sacked? Could he have thrown? Did he have time to throw the ball away? Was he trying to do too much? For the majority of those sacks, I don't know. I wasn't watching the first half, like right. just like you. But and then getting stripped like that, you got to get rid of the ball sooner. You got to be aware. So I don't think it's going to hurt him all that often in the grand scheme of things. This is the first time USC all season had seen a defense like this. They'd only played 2 top 30 defenses, I think, Texas. And Penn State, or no, I'm sorry, Texas and Washington. No, USC didn't play Washington. It was Stanford. There you go. We had to go through my progressions. I was thinking Penn State because of Ohio State. But, yeah, they played Stanford and Texas. Top 25 in one category is Texas, and top 30 is Stanford. A totally different monster when you're looking at a top 5 defense in Ohio State, a defense that runs 3, sometimes 4 defensive ends at the same time because they're that talented. It's a totally, totally different monster with Sam Hubbard and those guys, Nick Bosa and all those guys on the Ohio State front. So it was a different learning curve. Sure, one pessimist or skeptic can look at it and say, yeah, well, that's the first time he saw an NFL caliber players and he didn't play very well. I get that, but that doesn't mean he'll be that bad against them forever. It's an adjustment. It's the first time he's seen it. I mean, he'll get a chance in the NFL to adjust and see that kind of speed all over the place. In the grand scheme of things, I don't think this is going to hurt his draft stock all that much, if any at all.
Right. I'm a big fan for players coming back another year.
Me too. He's only a sophomore.
Right. So, you know, one more year is not going to hurt him, especially with how many quarterbacks are coming out this year. It might be best for him to sit there and stay another year, get a little better. I saw him miss some throws that he shouldn't have missed last night in that second half, like overthrowing players that are wide open. Like, you shouldn't do that. That's not NFL, you know, caliber right. play. So if he can hit those, you know, take one more year, start hitting those, he'll be top 5 draft pick easy.
Yeah. And well, he's still supposed to be this year, but I'm with you as far as him coming back. And the reason why we're talking about him coming back isn't because of one bad game. People have been talking since the middle of the season that he very well might come back and probably should come back for one more year. Not because he's bad or he's not necessarily ready. But he's just a sophomore. If he comes out as a junior, he'll still come out probably about at the average, I would say, of other quarterbacks. I don't know too many NFL-caliber quarterbacks that stay for their senior years. A couple have, and it bit them in the back. But if he comes back, what that gives him a chance to do, it's obvious when you watch Sam Darnold out there on the football field that he is a cut above all the average NCAA quarterbacks and all the really good NCAA quarterbacks. He is a great NFL talent. Ripe to be picked, but if he comes back one more year for his junior season, he has a chance to really polish that stuff off. Like you mentioned, like missing some of those throws. Some of the throws he missed, he was rushed and hurried. He might not necessarily have been, the defense might not have been on his tails, but it felt like it because he was pressured all night long. So one thing you're going to have to understand in the NFL, it's going to be like that all game long. So you're going to have to make sure you stay poised during those games that you've been sacked 5-6 times, and in this case, 8 times. You have to make sure you're still poised and you're still able to make those throws. Come back, play these defenses again, polish that stuff off, and you're not going to hurt your draft stock next if you come back next year. I don't think Sam Darnold can be that bad if he comes back one more year to where he hurts his draft stock from going from the number 1 overall quarterback, coming back in another year, and then possibly dropping –
out of the top five. I don't think that happens.
Oh, definitely, definitely. You know, and, you know, just wait a year, let, you know, the Browns get Baker Mayfield, and then you don't have to worry about that, you know?
Only you can see my face right now and know how serious I am when I say this. Don't say that.
They need a quarterback.
Browns are not going after Baker Mayfield. I hold not.
It just makes sense.
They're going after Josh Rosen. They're going after Josh Rosen. Baker Mayfield won't be a top five pick, and no, I'm glad he won't. Mayfield's going
to
go
second round to the Browns. I'm calling.
He's going to go bottom of the first round, hopefully to the Chargers or the Saints. That would be best case scenario for him. I think that would be a lot of fun.
I'll take him as a backup in Atlanta. You know.
If he goes to the Browns, I'll buy a Baker Mayfield Browns jersey. Absolutely, I'll buy a Baker Mayfield Browns jersey, and then I'll buy his. I want to get a hospital gown with like the number 6 on it, because that'll be his jersey if he goes to the Browns. He'll either be a bust, or he'll get hurt like everybody else seems to do over there. But the only quarterback I remember that was projected as a number one overall pick and came back and it hurt him was now I can't even remember his name, because I have Jake Browning stuck in my head now, but that's the Washington quarterback. Jake Locker, that's what I'm talking about. He came out of Washington and he went to Tennessee. That's the only one I remember. He was projected as the number one quarterback, came back, and he dropped. I think the Titans picked him at 10, something like that, and he was a big-time bust. I don't think you're going to get that with Sam Darnold, because Sam Darnold, I don't feel, is going to be an NFL bust. He's got some incredible tools for a young guy out there. And there were some throws he made in that game yesterday, especially when he escapes the pocket, that I was pretty impressed with. But to me, it seems like we're getting a lot of young guys who are able to escape the pocket and make some pretty impressive throws. Sam Darnold's one of them. Baker Mayfield's another one. But my only big gripe is that's all great, but you're not going to be able to escape the pocket as much in the pros as you can in the NCAA. So can you survive the pocket? Can you step up in the pocket and make throws? I think Sam Darnold can. Baker Mayfield, on the other hand, I don't think he can right now.
Right, and I think that's honestly a big problem with college football at this point, is to be a great college football quarterback, you almost have to escape the pocket, and it kind of sets you up for failure in the NFL, because they don't want that in the NFL. They want you to sit there and get a pass off, because you're going to have the protection, most cases. Some teams, you just don't get it because they're not good. But most teams, they want you to be able to sit in the pocket and make a pass. And, you know, that's why everyone looks at Baker saying, hey, he's not going to make it in the league because he runs. That's why everyone hated Johnny Manziel. You know, he didn't make it not because he couldn't throw the ball, but because he had off-field problems. But still.
Well, the one thing that gives me hope, I agree 100% with what you're saying, and the only thing that gives me hope is Baker Mayfield, he has the ability to stand in the pocket and make good throws whenever he has enough time.
Damn, I love Baker now.
That's great, but he has antsy feet. He would prefer to get out of the pocket. And I just don't think – I think that's going to be the biggest adjustment for him in the NFL. He's going to realize real quick how fast and how quick these guys can get to him.
It's not safe on the outside in the NFL.
How quickly they can get to him before he even gets to the outside in the NFL. But once he adjusts, he has the ability to throw in the pocket. His arm strength is very impressive. His accuracy is ridiculously impressive. I didn't think there would ever be another Oklahoma quarterback that could be as accurate as Sam Bradford was. And Baker Mayfield in 2 years, he's played 3 years at Oklahoma. Bradford only played two. But if you take any 2 years of Baker Mayfield at Oklahoma and then Bradford's 2 years at Oklahoma, Baker Mayfield dwarfs him. Bradford had the one better season with bigger stats, but you put both seasons together and pick any two seasons of Mayfield, he dwarfs him, including efficiency and accuracy. Now, the thing that I love about Baker Mayfield, everybody, you know, he's a gunslinger, he's wild, he's crazy, which is awesome, but he's also really smart and careful with the football. That's going to translate really well. The last piece of the puzzle he has to put together is making sure he hones in that ability and polishes up that ability to stand in the pocket and make throws. And it's going to be a huge adjustment for him because he's short. He's like Drew Brees and Russell Wilson. He's not as fast as Russell Wilson. That's going to hurt him as well. So he's not going to be able to survive outside the pocket as much as Wilson, I do believe. But I would love to see him go to New Orleans more than anything and learn under Drew Brees, because polish off that last little bit he needs to learn. Number one, because Drew Brees is a future Hall of Famer. But number two, because they're so similar in size and just poise, that would be fantastic. But Sam Darnold, on the other hand, he's a bigger guy. He's going to be able to stand in there and survive the pocket. So that's going to be great. I just want to see him come back and do it against better defenses. And in the Pac-12,
one solid year as a starter in the Pac-12 isn't going to do it. You need to come back and get to a bigger bowl game again and avenge this horrible showing to Ohio State, because this was miserable. And I'm sure it was miserable for him, but I don't think it was as miserable on the field as it was for us to watch. It was awful. I was laying there trying not to fall asleep at this game, hoping they'd get back into it.
Well, you didn't fall asleep?
No, I didn't. The more painful part was just seeing them go down and get in the red zone every time and just come up short because of a mistake that Ohio State forced. And USC's only touchdown came off a muffed punt from Ohio State, and USC was able to punch that in just 15 yards out. So there was one more big accomplishment. You brought up at the beginning of this segment that JT Barrett and Sam Darnold both broke pretty impressive records. Sam Darnold, the only 4,000 passer in USC history, and JT Barrett now the all-time Big Ten yards leader, total yards leader, breaking Drew Brees' record. There was one more really impressive stat that leads to something even bigger, and it came out of the Music City Bowl. It came on the Northwestern side of things. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break and exactly what that is and what that means for a certain position on the field. Right here on Tony Mac and the Triplets, 730-1039,
The Ump. The Ump, WUMP, 730 and 1039, The Ump.
Welcome back. Tony Mac and the Triplet here. Into the first hour already. This show is flying by. Tony Mack here. Tanner Long, Gabriel, Michael, whatever you want to call him, is here joining me. Aaron is out of town today. Aaron is the assistant coach of the varsity team for Boaz. He coaches the ninth graders. I can't remember who he's the head coach of. He's one of my best friends, and naturally, I don't know the answer. But he's the head coach of one of them.
We just have other best friends now.
Well, I had to pick up a new best friend since you had one. Okay. Now, that's just a recent title I've given just now.
No,
so,
okay.
But a good friend of mine, he normally the co-host on the show here. He is out of town all weekend up there doing a tournament. Hasn't won a game yet, unfortunately. But he's just the assistant coach of the varsity, and they're pretty bad.
He hasn't won a game yet?
In the tournament. I don't know if they've won a game, period. Him as a head coach has won. His boys have won, but the varsity, I don't know. They're pretty bad.
I'm going to say, man, I'm going to have to go help him.
You might. Shave up, you might be able to play.
Maybe.
Babyface.
I'm too out of shape for that now. I can, up and down the court two times, I'm not going to make it.
Back to college football. One more segment before we get into the top of the hour. The 10 o'clock hour, we'll have Bo Morgan with us, joining us to discuss a little NFL and the venue for the college football championship game and the Peach Bowl on Monday. He's going to join us at the top of the hour. But first, there was a record broken yesterday, and it's not JT Barrett's record that we've already spoken about. It's not Sam Darnold's record that we've already spoken about. It's back to the Music City Bowl, where Northwestern dominated on the ground, to say the least. They ran for 333 yards. Kentucky, I think, maybe had 65 rushing yards. It was pretty bad. Justin Jackson, if you're a Big Ten fan or a Northwestern fan, you've known that name for a few years now. He has now cracked the top 10 all time. This list you're looking at, Tanner's not updated. He's cracked the top 10 rushing yards all time, passing Cedric Benson, LaDainian Tomlinson, Damian Fletcher, and Anthony Thompson were the guys just above him. He has now moved into 10th all-time, which is really impressive, but it also leads to the bigger scale of things, and that's the fact that the running backs in college football, the stock of the running backs, the depth of the running backs all over college football have gone to an extreme height that I don't think I've seen since I've been alive. Well, maybe when I was really young, there was a lot of really good running backs. But in a long time, in at least 10 years, because the last 10 years, it's been dominated by quarterback talk. The Big 12 had the quarterback conference, and then the SEC had quarterback conference for a while. And there's been some good ones out of the Big 10. But now the running backs are dominating again. Think about this. Y'all remember the name Donnell Pumphrey. We spoke about him a lot last year because he became number one all-time in rushing yards. But if you adjust and include bowl stats, Ron Dane and Tony Dorsett still rank ahead of him, but he's still top three all-time in rushing yards in NCAA history. And then this year, you had Royce Freeman as well break into the top 10. He's number 7. He didn't play in his bowl game, but he wouldn't have touched D'Angelo Williams. He would have had to run for 400 yards. But you've got Royce Freeman now top 7, and then now Justin Jackson. And think about all the running backs we've had come out that haven't cracked this list. You've still got Ezekiel Elliott, Leonard Fournette, Oklahoma with Samaje Perine and Joe Mixon. Alabama's put out Derrick Henry, a Heisman winner. The running backs in college football have been insane these last few years. Now, we haven't got to see a lot of them get the opportunity in the NFL yet, but some of them that we have done very well. You've got Leonard Fournette playing really well as a rookie. Alvin Kamara out of Tennessee was barely utilized there. He's doing fantastic in New Orleans. He's probably going to get Offensive Rookie of the Year. And there are so many more examples. Jay Ajayi's only been a few years removed from Boise State.
Kareem Hunt
out of Toledo.
He had a great beginning of the season.
Kareem Hunt out of Toledo. It's been unreal. Now, I'd like to see where more of these running backs go in the NFL and if they're going to get an opportunity and what they're going to do with that opportunity. Because as of right now, the stock in the running backs, because of what they're doing in college football, is rising again in the NFL and what Zeke was able to come in and do, what Fournette's doing right now, what Alvin Kamara is able to do. You still got Mark Ingram playing very well in New Orleans. The list goes on and on. You've got Melvin Gordon. You've got Todd Gurley. The big names in the NFL are no longer stick with quarterbacks. You're spreading out to obviously wide receivers because that's who your quarterback throws the ball to.
Right.
But now you've got running backs. And I think it's fantastic for the game of football. You're an avid fantasy football player. I mean, you're ridiculously obsessive about it.
Yes.
How awesome is that for fantasy football?
Oh, running backs, they're the heart of fantasy football. Like, you can't have a good season without having a decent running back on your roster. I got into this crazy league where they gave us a point per carry with running backs, and we have an extra flex position. So I'm literally running four running backs every week. Scoring over 200 points a week.
Well, we'll talk to Bo Morgan on the other side of the break about running backs as well. We'll be right back, top of the hour. Tony Mack and the Triplet, 730, 103.9, The Ump. Stay tuned.
WUMP Madison, W28 OBA Madison Huntsville, a Cumulus station. Sports Radio 730 and 103.9, The Ump. It's Tony Mack and the Triplet with your host, Antonio McBeth. And Aaron Triplett, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins! Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach! The good talent wants to play for him!
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are, Tony Mack and the Triplett.
Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplet here. Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. Beautiful Saturday morning so far. Hopefully it stays this way just for another hour because I have to drive home, and I'd like to drive home without it raining or any kind of weather, because all week long, the last couple weeks, I've hit all kinds of different weather, whether it be rain. It's been miserable, and tack that on to having to drive early in the morning. And I can use one more day where it's clear, it's beautiful, just like the playoff picture in the NFL. It's beautiful, it's a mess, which is what I absolutely love about it, because it makes the last week a lot more interesting. You've got in the AFC, you have Tennessee, the Rams, the Charger, and the Bills all fighting for one playoff spot. If the Titans win, they're in. They get it. But if they lose, you still got the Chargers and Bills fighting for a spot. But Tennessee could still lose and get in. That's going to be a lot of fun. In the NFC, you pretty much have a more cut-and-dry scenario. If the Falcons win, they're in. They got it. It's over with. And then I believe the only other team that can contend for that spot would be the Seahawks if the Falcons were to lose. So to help us sort this whole mess out, we got a guy that's stationed – right there. We've got the executive producer for Atlanta Falcons Radio Network. He produces on the 92.9 The Game. We've had him on a few times here. He's a good friend of the show. If you thought you had a Southern country accent, then you've never talked to Bo Morgan, a guy they call Squidbilly. Bo, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
Fantastic. Now, I've had you on a few times, and I don't know if I've ever asked you. I have to. How did you get the nickname Squidbilly? I got to know.
I work with a guy named Mike Bell, who does afternoons here on 92.9 The Game, and he decided to don me with the nickname Squidbilly. So that it came from him, and it was just back. We were doing an event, and I guess I looked like one of the Squidbillies from the Cartoon Network, which is an odd show if you've ever watched that on Adult Swim.
He said you look like one of the Squidbillies?
Yeah, I had an issue with my hair that day. We had been racing go-karts for charity at Andretti Karting and Games here in Atlanta in Alpharetta. And so it came from that. You know, they look pretty weird on that show with their hair. So, yeah, you can imagine.
Yeah, they're pretty weird with the hair and, you know, the tentacles. So they're a little weird. But something that... Yeah, I got to have you help clarify here. The Atlanta Falcons, you got to ease the mind of some Falcons fans. I actually have a Falcons fan sitting in here with me, co-hosting the show today. He'll probably have a couple questions for you. The Falcons have pretty much a playing game. They got to play the Panthers to win to get in the playoffs. The Panthers already clinched. They've clinched that five spot, or they've clinched a spot. How motivated are the Panthers going to be in this game? Are they going to start Cam Newton? Are they going to start and go all out and try to win this game? Or are the Falcons going to have a pretty easy road going up against the second string?
Oh, no, they're absolutely starting. It's all hands on deck for Carolina. See, Carolina's in a situation where they could actually get the 2 seed if everything works out right.
Wow.
You got to have New Orleans lose. You got to have Minnesota lose. But they could perceivably get the 2 seed because they hold a tiebreaker over Minnesota the same way that Seattle holds one by the victory of a head-to-head. So you're going to get the best Carolina team. They're going to start everybody. Now, this is a team in Carolina that, you know, they're – I know this sounds bad, especially coming from a guy with Falcons glasses on, but they're a little bit of a front-running team. If you punch them in the mouth, if Atlanta can jump up on them by – you know, maybe 13-0 or something. That did happen in the first game, but it was in Carolina. But if you jump on this team, do they start thinking about their New Year's Eve plans and can we get out of here as quick as we can? I know Captain Munderland's already even said that he wishes it was a 1 o'clock game because he wants to spend New Year's Eve doing what he wants to do and not traveling home from Atlanta. So you're gonna get the best shot that Carolina has. They know that what this game means. No one wants to see Atlanta in. As up and down as they've been, they're still perceived to be an extremely dangerous team if playoffs come and they're alive.
Well, if we're going all hands on deck for Carolina, how many hands on deck are we going to have for the Falcons? How healthy are they going to be? I know they've battled some timely injuries off and on this season. How healthy is the running back and the receiving core for Atlanta?
Running back in the receiving core aren't the guys that are a concern at the moment. The guys that are a concern is the interior of your offensive line. And, you know, everyone knows that that's the worst thing possible when playing Carolina because the interior those guys have, Star Latua Lele, Kawan Short, those are some of the best guys. And Carolina has one of the best front sevens in the league. So, that's where, you know, Alex Mack got hurt in practice this week. Andy Levitre has missed the last 3 games with the bicep, tricep, whichever one it is. I think he'll be back this week. At least he's going to give it a go. And then Wes Schweitzer randomly appeared on the injury report as well. And I think all those guys will go. Alex Mack is not going to miss a game. We saw him play with a broken leg, and at a decent level, you know, he did wear down a little bit late in the Super Bowl, but he played with a broken leg for half an NFC Championship game and a full Super Bowl. So they are banged up. It's not looking good there as far as with the injuries they are suffering because of the interior. But I think you're going to see all these guys go. I don't perceive these guys missing. Now Levine Tololo will miss the game. He's already been ruled out, and so. He missed half of last week as well.
I don't think people understand the greatness of the matchup we're going to see this weekend with, like you said, Carolina has a chance, if things work out, to grab that 2 seed. And Atlanta is playing for a playoff spot right now. But also, you have the experience on both sides. You want to lean on the experience for Atlanta. They did this last year. They made a Super Bowl run. They can lean on that playoff experience. Well, just a couple of years ago, Carolina did the same thing. They made a Super Bowl run with NFL MVP. You got the last two NFL MVPs going head-to-head this weekend, both running off of great playoff experience. It's going to be a great matchup head-to-toe.
Yeah, neither guy has played up to their MVP level. Yeah. Court, you know, if you look at most now, they've kind of gotten to where they are in different ways. If you look at Cam Newton's year, it's been somewhat pedestrian, to be honest with you. The guy's thrown, I believe, around 13 interceptions. Now he is completing it's been one of his best years completion percentage wise. He's completing 60% of his passes, but you know, very pedestrian the last few weeks. I think he only had like 137 yards passing last week. But the Carolina has gone back to doing what they've done with Cam in the past, and that's letting him get out there and run with the ball. I mean, he leads the team in rushing, if that tells you anything. But for Carolina, you want to talk about kind of getting back to their old formula. Well, they've added a new element in there with Christian McCaffrey. The guy has been phenomenal. He leads the team in catches. You know, he only has around 400-something yards rushing. But the element he adds is something that they've been missing. He's a playmaker, and they like to get him the ball out in space. And, you know, one of the things that if you go back and watch early in the season when Carolina was still trying to get things going, he is, and he still is, he's a complete safety valve for Cam Newton. It's probably why his completion percentages went up, because guy catches anything near him, but they still want to just kind of pick away. They want to play defense. They're a plotting offense. Nothing has changed about either of these two teams except for the fact that this offense for Atlanta is a little bit more inconsistent than what we saw last year. But again, they have had stretches. They had a three-game stretch in the middle of the season with Dallas and Seattle and Tampa Bay, where they put up 30-plus or right at 30. And so they both know what the other's capable of doing. And if you look back and watch the game when they first went and played each other, I believe it was in October, it was kind of the way Carolina wanted the game to be played, more of a plotting, like turnovers involved. Mm-hmm. But Atlanta still had a chance to win the game. And you go back and look at a 4th-and-7 play where the best player on the field makes a routine play normally, and he didn't make it that moment. And that was the difference between these two teams back in October.
Let's talk about, for just a second, because you brought him up, let's talk about Christian McCaffrey for just a second. I remember towards the beginning of the season, preseason, and even in the regular season, people wanted to ask him the question, why not just move to receiver? You're very good with your hands. You're a smaller guy anyway. And my answer to that is how versatile he's been. Like you mentioned, he's a running back leading the team in catches for Carolina. But if he gets a little tougher running the football, and you mentioned he didn't have very many rushing yards, but if he gets tougher running the football, he adds a different Le'Veon Bell-esque element to Carolina, does he not?
He does with his catches. I don't think, you know, comparing him to Le'Veon Bell,
he's got to get tougher running the football.
Yeah, well, he's not as big as that. He's not exactly as big as a Le'Veon Bell. But look, when we played these guys in October, he went off and he ran a lot inside the tackles. And they ran for 200 yards against this Falcons team in October. And you can go back and say, you know what, 60 of it was on a Cam Newton option read. But they still put the numbers up, and McCaffrey ran good in between the tackles. Now, you could say Atlanta's a little bit small up front in some way. I mean, we do have Don Terry Poe up there, but Grady Jarrett's not your normal nose guy as far as size. So, but all that being said, McCaffrey is going to be a change of pace guy. And I could, you know, they got Cameron Artis Payne, who's a bigger guy, but Jonathan Stewart's still been their bell cow. But McCaffrey is a two-way player, like you mentioned, a David Johnson, a Devontae Freeman, like in 2015 when Free caught 73 passes. He's a two-way player, and that's what running backs kind of have to be these days. And I thought it was a brilliant draft pick by Carolina. And with them going back and using Cam more this year as is kind of, they've kind of committed themselves to saying, you know what, we need a yard, Cam's our guy. If we want to mix it up a little bit, that's where McCaffrey comes into play. But he's been great for this team.
Absolutely. Now I've got you for just a few more minutes. Something else I want to talk about. If Atlanta wins, they clinch the sixth seed, right? They don't have a chance to move up anywhere else, so they won't get a home game in the playoffs. But you still have a home game this weekend. This one is in Atlanta. Plus, so you got a game tomorrow, and then you turn around and you host the Peach Bowl on Monday, and then just a week later, you host the College Football National Championship game. And in those games, you've got Atlanta playing at home, so you've got a big home crowd. In the Peach Bowl, you have Auburn playing, so you're going to have a big following coming from Alabama there. And then in the championship game, you potentially have the chance of either Georgia or Alabama or both playing. So you're probably going to draw a huge crowd for all of these football games. What in the world? I can't imagine, especially with the traffic, the way things are right now, and the fiasco with the Georgia Dome over there. What in the world is the city of Atlanta going to look like these next couple of weeks?
Oh, it's gonna be fun, I guess. Exciting is what you want to say. I'm going to be miserable because I live in Buckhead, which is a little bit away from where the game is going to be, but we do have a lot of people staying here. It's cool, though. I'll be honest with you. It's really cool living here and seeing fans walk down the street of the different various teams. It does. I can assure you, I'll throw Clemson in there as well because Clemson travels, not a far drive, and it will be cool to see. But, you know, parking is not as bad at the stadium as people might make out. You're not really missing a lot parking-wise from the Georgia Dome. In fact, anything, really, because the lots that were open for the Georgia Dome are all still open.
Wow.
So that'll be okay, but it's just going to be slammed. And the real MVPs of this stretch like this is the staff at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We almost had an 825 kick, and they would have had to turn the dome or turn the stadium around the next day by noon for a noon kickoff, which means the stadium will be open around 10. So that would have been rough for them. But we've seen them do it in similar situations. This is going to be very similar to the SEC championship where you got a 4 o'clock kick, where I'm a 4:25, and then they'll be ready at noon to go and kick off for the Peach Bowl. So those are the real guys, because when we spoke to Rich McKay the other day, he pointed out that, hey, don't forget, these bowl games do things differently. They want giveaways. They want the cup holders to be filled with their tickets for Chick-fil-A and maybe some kind of free towel or something. And it's hard to stuff the cup holders with little free gifts and such while you're going through and sweeping up the stadium with cups and beer bottles and all kinds of things that have been left over from the night before. So the real MVP is going to be the Mercedes, I can't even speak anymore, Mercedes-Benz Stadium crew. You know, the guys that'll do the fill, the guys that clean, the concession stand people that will be there. That's where the real MVPs are going to come in.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bo Morgan here with us, executive producer of the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network. A couple more questions for you. Number one, we spoke. This is one of the things that I had to get you on the air to talk about at the beginning of the season. And I want to know how it's worked out so far, because I actually, a direct comparison, just went to the Music City Bowl in Nashville yesterday at Nissan Stadium, NFL Stadium, you know, extremely ridiculously priced on beer and food. And everything else. The cheapest thing I found there was a $5 cup of hot chocolate. Now, I know the prices are extreme, on the absolute extreme opposite at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. How awesome has that been all season long to witness, like, pretty much a transcending option where the prices can actually be reasonable at a concession stand?
Oh, it's been cool. It might have had a bad effect. We might have too many people standing in line to get the $2 Cokes and hot dogs and the $5 beers and not in the stands enough at times. But it's been really good. I've heard a lot of good things. I remember I attended the Garth Brooks concert for the first concert in October.
It's a good concert to have.
And yeah, it was a lot of fun. There was a little bit of issues with the sound. Depending on where you were sitting, believe it or not, it affected different seating areas differently. But look, it's been great. and you've heard, I've heard a lot of positive feedback, not only from, you know, my wife and having family go to the games, but when I went myself to the Garth Brooks concert, so it's been really cool. The one thing I'll say is the suites down on the field have been awesome for fans, but sometimes I think fans might sit so too much in those suites or might be around and enjoying the stadium too much and not in their seat at times during certain games. So it's been really cool, though, and I think that once the newness wears off of the stadium, you'll find people getting accustomed to it, and it won't be such a hysteria with all of that. But it's been cool, and the stadium's been unbelievable. I can't think of a better place to get to go to, 10 times a year to work and watch some football.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, is it wishful thinking for me to say this will have an impact on the rest of the league? Because I sure hope
yeah,
so.
Yeah, a little bit.
I was afraid of that.
I think you go back and you look when Mr. Blank bought the team when the Georgia Dome was still open. He went and, I believe, dropped $500 million of his own money into that stadium to repaint the outside, redo the seats. You know, the Georgia Dome had those peach-colored seats and that teal green. He made them red and black. And he did some other things that renovated the stadium, and people forget about that. And now he put a lot of his own money into the $1.6 billion, I think, that people will tell you. Be quickly to point out, hey, it costs this many billion. Well, Mr. Blank put a lot of his own money in that, and a lot of owners won't do that. And so I think guys are trying to make that buck off, but he cares about the fan, and he cares about the experience. And you look at what the United have brought. I mean, the United broke attendance record after attendance record for the MLS when they opened up. They had to open up the entire stadium, which wasn't their plan originally, quite a few times. So I think it's wishful thinking. Hopefully maybe a few other owners will jump onto that, but I'd be shocked if you saw those prices in the new LA stadium once they get that built in Inglewood and then the new one in Las Vegas. I'd be shocked.
Yeah, it would be nice to see, though. But if Oklahoma wins in the college football playoff, I might get to experience those at Mercedes-Benz Dome because I might just have to make a trip up there and watch that game. Finally, before I let you go, this will be the last one. I didn't get a chance to ask you before. I forgot to ask you before, but New Orleans sitting at 11-4, Carolina sitting at 11-4, and the Falcons at 9-6. Unfortunately for the Falcons, it kind of hurts them right now because they have to play Carolina. They're in the toughest division in football right now. But if they were able to survive Carolina, get there with a win, how much is it going to benefit the Falcons going into the playoffs in the NFC after coming out of surviving and making a playoff spot out of the toughest division in football right now?
Well, this team's battle-tested, first and foremost. You look at their schedule, that they played one of the toughest schedules down the stretch. They played one of the toughest schedules overall. So you mix in some other teams that they've played, not just in the NFC South. Look, it's going to be great. And I think there's a real possibility that if you win on Sunday that you're playing New Orleans, which would be a benefit. I think this team has played wonderful against the Saints. Look, some things didn't go our way. Now, offensively, we maybe haven't played our best ball against New Orleans, but defensively, you held that team to their two lowest totals or two of their three lowest yards totals all season. And there's something to be said about that, but this team knows how to win ball games. If you beat another quality opponent in Carolina and make it to the playoffs, your battle test, if you went on the road and won in Seattle, which is one of the toughest places, you would have not only done that, you would have beaten New Orleans. You would have beaten Carolina. Look, you maybe were a play or two away from beating Minnesota, which was a very good game. The defense is real. The defense has played good offenses. I just think that the team's battle-tested. The clutch gene is there. They've been up and down with consistency. But there's something to say about a team that's battle-tested and knows how to win ball games against playoff teams. And that's one thing that this team would bring to the playoffs. If they win on Sunday, it'll be one more playoff team they've played and beaten. So, I mean, I just think it makes them dangerous. And they, like you said earlier, look, they've won in the playoffs before. They know what it takes. There's something to say and something to be worried about when you see a team that's come in there that's done it before and has been battle-tested all year and still found a way to make it.
Bo Morgan, Atlanta Falcons Radio Network, has been our guest, taking time out of his Saturday morning with – an upcoming hectic weekend in Atlanta to join us. You are a champ, man. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
No, thank you guys. Anytime.
All right, have a great weekend, man.
All right, y'all too.
Happy New Year to Bo Morgan. We'll be right back with more Tony Mack and the Triplet right here on Sports Radio 730 1039 at the Ump. Tony Mack and the Triplet here at 730, 1039 The Ump. Just a few more moments to talk here, a couple more segments before we got to set you guys off to Alabama basketball pregame. Tanner, we're going to talk a little playoff here before we end the show because it's the last live show here before the new year. So we've got to get some playoff talking here. We got to start with Oklahoma, Georgia, the Rose Bowl, the 4 o'clock kick on Monday, mainly because a huge development. He's talking on TV right now. I can't hear what he's saying. But you were reading a development that Baker Mayfield is sick. He's going to play, but he won't be 100%, according to head coach Lincoln Riley. Now, that is a massive development for this game because while Oklahoma is a very potent offense, they get it done all over the field. It obviously starts with the Heisman Trophy winner in Baker Mayfield. If there was anybody on the planet in college football that would give you a flu game, it would be Baker Mayfield.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, man, he's a gamer. He's going to be all right. He's sick. It's okay. He doesn't look sick from seeing him on TV right there.
Well,
he looks fine.
I want to hear his voice because he's missed every single team activity. Not practice. He's practiced, but all the, like, the Disneyland trips and the dinners and stuff like that. He's missed all of those because he's sick. So I'm really curious to see. I'm ready. I'm just ready for Monday. This is another thing that just says, can we please get to Monday already? Because there's an awful feeling in the pit of my stomach when you see stuff like this. But of course, it would be that kind of break for Oklahoma. 2 years ago, they were in the playoff, trying to avenge their loss to Clemson. Now, they obviously don't play Clemson, but they're trying to avenge their playoff loss that happened to be to Clemson. And just so happened, your Heisman Trophy winner, where everything starts on your football team, is sick.
Yeah, it's tough, but like I said, anyone's going to give you a flu game, it's going to be him. He loves to compete, so he's going to go out there and play hard. And, you know, looking at him, he combed his hair for this. I don't comb my hair when I'm sick. You know, I throw a hat on. So
That's actually very fair. It's really fair because when I'm sick, I don't get out of bed. Like, if I have a head cold, I'm on my deathbed.
Right.
So, and he's got some competition. He's got to step his game up because Purdue's starting quarterback played and won their bowl game, won offensive MVP, threw 4 touchdowns on a torn ACL. So,
oh, yeah. See, yeah, you got
to
compete.
So now you have to go out.
You got to show them up.
Yeah, exactly. You got to go out there and perform and compete. But even if Baker Mayfield plays and he's 100%, well, he will play. Even if he's 100% and goes out there, you can't ask for 2 better matchups because this year you're not watching the early game thinking, oh, hurry up late game. I just want to get to the late game. This year, just like the first year of the playoff, you have the 2 best matchups you can ask for. What do you expect to see against Oklahoma and Georgia? I know you got that great defensive front and mainly the front for Georgia. That's where all the praise comes from. And that potent Oklahoma offense. Are you as excited as I am? Speaking to a fan outside of Oklahoma and Georgia, are you excited to just see those 2 sides of the ball go at it?
Definitely, definitely. I'm more interested to see what the other side does. Mm-hmm. The Oklahoma defense that has kind of underperformed in some cases. You know, they like to give up plays that they really shouldn't give up. And I'm interested to see what the Georgia run game does. They have a couple great running backs there that I just don't feel have got the actual look that they deserve. You know, people do mention them, but I think they're better than people tend to remember. You
know. They have 3 fantastic running backs. I think they have a couple 1,000-yard rushers. I'm not sure if they both got there, Sony Michel and Nick Chubb. And then DeAndre Swift has like 700 yards rushing as well. So that's a wrinkle that Oklahoma hasn't seen this year. They're running into a team that's just as deep in the backfield as they are. And that's a big adjustment. That would be a big adjustment for Alabama. Alabama hasn't seen a team with running backs that deep. So if Alabama were to play Georgia, it's a different look because, like you mentioned, it's not Nick Chubb coming out and DeAndre Swift going in. It's Nick Chubb coming out and then Sony Michel going in and then DeAndre Swift going in. It's ridiculous to have that much experience back there and you hope for, you know, maybe a freshman mistake. You got the fresh legs, but you hope for maybe a mistake out of one of these guys because they're not the starter and you can get them to slip up and get them for a couple yards lost. But you're not going to get that out of these guys. Plus, that Georgia offensive line – I didn't think was all that special until the SEC championship game, and they played amazing. So that's going to be a big development. I expect Oklahoma to do exactly what they did against Ohio State. They're going to come out. They're not going to play this big spread defense like they did all conference. They're going to come out against Ohio State and probably stack the box and dare Jake Fromm to throw. Now, I think Jake Fromm's already, as a freshman, a lot better with his arm than JT Barrett is. They're going to have to stick with it a little bit. Just understand that good guys are going to make good plays, so you can't abandon it after one big game. Stick with it. Don't let them beat you on both phases of the ball, because if they're able to run and throw against you, it's going to be a long day for Oklahoma.
And we spoke about this game earlier this week and about how Georgia's kind of looked at it as they're not really supposed to be there, kind of. Like they're the underdog.
A little early.
And, you know, they're going to be playing with a chip on their shoulder.
Sure.
They want to come in this game and just beat y'all. They want to beat y'all bad. And prove that, hey, we're here to win a championship. We're not here for anything else. So I think that's another thing that might kind of play into this game. You know, who wants it more, kind of? You know, Baker, he wants it.
Sure.
The rest of the team, he's probably going to rally the rest of the team, say, hey, y'all want it too. But I think this whole Georgia team's like, hey, we're going in here to prove a point.
Right. Believe it or not, Georgia favored in this game. Georgia is the slight favorite to win this football game. What I'm interested to see, I'm assuming mainly on it's because of the defensive side of the ball for Oklahoma. I'm excited to see that defense play, because for an entire month, people in the media, basically just people in the media, they have to hear that talk from Georgia fans and the media all month long, that this side of the reason why we're picking Georgia is because this side of the ball is not good enough. They're not good enough. They haven't been good enough all year. They're not good enough to compete in the college football playoff. You've got Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia, three top 10 defenses. Oklahoma's not even in the top 50 in defense. They're not good enough to compete. You tell someone that you're a competitor, you tell someone, maybe you're not playing the defensive side of the ball, but you're the leader of that football team like Baker Mayfield is. You tell someone for a month they're not good enough, they're going to be ready to play.
Oh, definitely, definitely. You come out there with a different mindset to where,
exactly,
hey, I'm not going to let this happen.
It's a different level of focus.
Definitely. And these are all athletes. Everyone out on that field,
right,
has a competitive sense to them, regardless we see it or not in the media. But they all have that sense that we see, you know, just Baker just show everyone. Baker kind of,
exactly,
just puts it out there. But they all have that in them. And to tell someone, hey, you're not good enough, is never good in this situation.
Exactly. So I'm excited to see that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to end the show by talking about the other matchup. We're going to talk a little Alabama-Clemson right here on Tony Mack and the Triplet, Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump.
730 and 103.9 The Ump. More sports.
Welcome back to Tony Mack and the Triplet here, 7:30 at 103.9 The Ump. Just a few more minutes here. Tanner co-hosting with me today. We're going to talk. We discussed the Oklahoma-Georgia matchup in the Rose Bowl before we get into Alabama-Clemson. Who you got in the Rose Bowl matchup?
Man, I got to go with Alabama. They're
not playing in the Rose Bowl.
Oh.
Oklahoma-Georgia.
Oh, Oklahoma. You know, I can't go against Oklahoma.
Okay, moving on to the Sugar Bowl. Spoiler alert, you're picking Alabama.
Alabama, yeah, surprise.
Okay. Why? Tell me why. Why you got Alabama this game?
Man, Alabama, they've been there every year. Clemson, obviously.
3 years now, so that's where it gets really interesting. That Clemson has a lot more staying power than I think a lot of people thought they would.
Definitely.
Including me.
But you don't give Nick Saban a month to prepare for a team and expect Alabama to lose. I think it's been a different situation meeting Clemson in the championship. You know, you got a week there. Saban's had a whole month to prepare this team, and I feel like they will be ready because they do have something to prove going against Clemson.
I think that is the best point out of any talk of this matchup, and I agree with you 100%, is Saban's been the best even in the beginning of the regular season when he's got those big non-conference matchups against Florida State and whoever. He is so good about getting a team ready, a lot better at the beginning of the season than anybody else is. Well, this is a very similar situation. You have an entire month off. You've got holiday interference. You know what I mean? You've got all these distractions, but he still has everybody ready to play. He's the best at that. Now we get to see what Dabo's like doing that against an Alabama team. But by default, since we haven't seen that yet, I'm with you. It's really hard to go against Alabama there. The only reason I would lean Clemson right now is how balanced they are, and the fact that the last time we saw Alabama, there's just that question mark of the way their offense performed. They abandoned running the football for whatever reason, and now they're about to go up against an even better defensive front in Clemson's defensive front. I think they had three of their guys on the front line make all ACC, the all ACC team. Colin Farrell, and then a bunch of those guys, and Christian Wilkinson, and all of those guys, they're monsters. And Alabama, sure, they play big fronts in the SEC all the time, but now it's not like they lose to Auburn and they get a warm-up for the championship game. Now they're right back at it, going up against maybe even a better defensive front. So it's another challenge. The defense is going to hold their part. I mean, I know Clemson's offense is very balanced, and whether you think Clemson's offense is better than Alabama's offense, that doesn't matter. All that matters now is what is Clemson's offense going to do against that Alabama defense compared to what is that Alabama offense going to do against that Clemson defense. Those are the two things you have to separate in your mind and think. And I think that Clemson's offense is going to have a few more opportunities than Alabama. So what they do with those opportunities is going to determine the outcome of this game.
And you look at the loss that Alabama had against Auburn, and man, that you can't really count that because it's the Iron Bowl. Anyone can win that game.
But now we're turning this is turning into a rivalry too now. Clemson, Alabama, part three.
It is, but it's still not the Iron Bowl. That game has so much hype to it, and all the players know. This game does too, obviously. It's the playoff.
Right.
But Alabama's going to go out there and fight. And I feel like they might actually control this game and win it.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you for that insight. I'd love to see a closer game, so I hope not. That's going to do it for the last live local show before the new year here on Tony Mack and the Triplet, 730, 103.9 The Ump. Everybody have a wonderful new year. On behalf of Tanner Long, my co-host, we hope you guys enjoy every bit of it. Thank you, guys. Stay tuned.